Welcome to Season 3, Episode 1 of RPG Circus, the greatest show in gaming. In this episode, Mark discusses what he learned from running D&D encounters. And we get our views on the D&D fortune cards. Again, welcome to Season 3, Episode 1 of RPG Circus. My name is Jeff, and joining me as normal is Mark. Zach, sadly, had a work emergency, so he was not able to join us for this recording session, which I'm sorry, people. We're kind of sorry. We really wanted him on, but that's the way it goes sometimes. So, how are you doing? How was your Christmas?
Not bad. I got a lot of good gaming stuff. I ran my family through a game of D&D, and that was a lot of fun. That included my mom and my dad, and my brother, my sister-in-law, and my wife. So that was a lot of fun. I got Cadwallon City of Thieves, a board game by Fantasy Flight.
Oh.
And my dad got me a flashing D20 that flashes whenever the 20 is rolled.
Well, that's a weird item. I wonder where he got that thing.
From ThinkGeek.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You know, I guess I don't really check out that much sometimes, you know?
It's pretty nifty. So. I actually used it last night at my D&D Encounters game, and I got it to flash a couple of times when it landed on the 20, so that was good.
Well, at least that was something special, so that's kind of cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. How was yours?
Not too bad. Kind of update. Someone brought me the Pathfinder Game Mastery. Is that what they call it?
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah, the Game Mastery book, which is actually kind of nifty. I mean, there's some of it's repetitive, but some of it's like, okay, that makes sense. I like that. So, I mean, it's just kind of nice just to have something additional. You know,
mm-hmm.
It's always fun to have reading material. So.
Yeah.
That wasn't that bad. Well, we got we actually got kind of a little small bit of news, so why don't we go ahead and get into that right now.
Let's do it.
So, yeah, there's a lot of stuff in there. First off, as you pointed out to us earlier, we are actually listed in the podcasting section at RPG Geek. Is that right?
Yes. Yes, we are.
So, and there's...
It's actually... I was just surfing around. I just noticed that they actually were listing podcasts. And I went and I found us on there. And I was really excited to see that.
Yeah, that was that's kind of cool. So, and they have some sort of badges or something. Is that, well, how does that work? I really have never used their site.
They've got these micro badges that you can get for Geek Gold, and you get Geek Gold by writing reviews and session reports and things like that. And the micro badges basically just go underneath your picture, and they have things that you're fans of. They recently had a game online that you could play. It was all based on RPG Geek, and if you completed it, you got a special little micro badge for that. And I have an RPG podcaster micro badge, mouse guard, things like that. Huh. And I noticed that one of them was actually a little tiny circus tent, and it's an RPG Circus fan.
Wow.
One. So, yeah.
That's interesting. I wonder how many people actually have those.
Somebody made us a little book and everything. That was awesome.
Well, there you go. That's pretty cool. Well, the kind of the major one probably. I think it was kind of before the holidays that we got that, but after our last episode that we recorded was Iron Crown Enterprises, makers slash owner slash I don't know what you want to call it of. The Rollmaster product lines And when I say product lines, I do mean product lines because there's two of them. There's the Rolemaster Standard System and the Rolemaster Classic. And then, you know, if depending on who you are, you can actually count HARP as kind of a third one. So apparently, I'm going to mispronounce how they pronounce it, but I think it's Mjolnir LLC was the licensee. They were actually running all the, you know, development and publishing and of all the, you know, Rolemaster products. And basically, the actual owners of the ICE product line, I'm not going to pronounce their company name. They just kind of said, you know what, they're no longer our licensee. We're gonna, they officially took over, you know, the website and the forums and a whole bunch of other stuff. So it will be interesting to see what they do, because I'm not sure. The truth is that I'm not sure they can do much with the. With the product line, because it, as much as I have a soft spot in my heart for Rolemaster, most people consider it a joke or a bad idea. No, I mean, I'm serious. I think a lot of people hold up ICE, you know, Rolemaster as what not to do in a role-playing system, especially the standard system. So it's sad, but that's kind of the way it works. So, and it, other interesting news, you're familiar with 66 Fireball?
Yes.
Yeah, apparently he's going to run a little PDF sale experiment, is what he calls it. And the description is basically he's going to have what's going to be released in a PDF of freely available on his website as part of the wiki, in some sort of wiki format, and then you can get a print format. And I don't know, it sounds, mostly he says he's trying to just do an experiment to see, because he doesn't expect to do a lot of sales, but he just kind of wants to see how sales work and maybe use it as a test bed for, you know, other people that are more interested in actually doing PDF sales.
Yeah.
So we'll see how that pans out. It will be interesting to see what kind of data or conclusion he comes to after he runs with it for a while.
Yeah.
So we actually got, you know, me and Zach have always talked about Rogue Games quite a bit.
Oh, yeah.
And there's actually a little bit of news for them. One is, of course, is they're going to have a re-edit of Shadow Sword and Spell, and that's going to come out within the next couple of months.
So that'll have errata and things like that?
Yes. It will have errata and some other things. Good news is that if you already own a copy, like the hard copy, and you already get the PDF, you can get, they're going to send you a new PDF.
Oh, cool.
So if you just bought it's not like you're going to be out. You're going to have to buy it again.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how the Thousand Suns revision is going to come out, but that's going to come out in 2011. May 2011, which is kind of interesting because, you know, I kind of like the idea of a Thousand Suns, and I've seen some of the changes because they have a pretty active mailing list where they've been, you know, it's Yahoo groups technically, and they've had some of the files for the revisions that they're planning on doing for a Thousand Suns. A lot of clarity. Their description is it's not really a revision. It's kind of a reformatting, re-edit, and it should be 95% compatible with the old rules. I think one of the major things that they're changing is I don't think they ever really liked how they wrote the Psionic rules. So it's like, okay, we're going to dump those and do something else, and then the ships in the game are going to be stripped-down versions of what's present in their Starship book, Thousand Suns Starship.
Oh, okay.
So it's kind of unifying with some of the stuff that came out later. And then the equipment is going to be based off of one of the other books. Is it Thousand Suns Transmissions that has a whole bunch of optional rules? And it's kind of been, there's like some equipment building rules in there, and they're going to actually use those for a lot of things in the rules. So basically what they're doing is they're taking other stuff that's published to handle specific things and just retrofitting them back into the basic rule book. So the basic rule book is what you need to get, and you don't have to get those other things. The other things just explain how those things are built.
Oh, okay.
So I think that's I think that's probably a good way to do it. So it'll be interesting. I probably will pick that up just because. And kind of as a side note, one of the interesting things that I noticed is that they have stuff for people who have an Amazon Kindle or even other ebook readers like the Nook. They're actually offering their stuff in both. In those formats. Matter of fact, you can actually go to
Cool.
You can actually go to Amazon Kindle and search for Thousand Suns and buy the rulebook in Kindle format.
Excellent.
From Amazon.
Because I've been looking at getting a Kindle soon, and that might be the way to go for me, because I'm really interested in picking up the Thousand Suns book.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, and it's like, and it's $10, and mm-hmm. the regular book, I don't want to say, I think it's like 19 or 20. So, okay. You know, you get it. Basically, if you see, but that's the thing. I have to shoot an email to them because I'm very curious, because I think what they're going to eventually do is, if you buy the hardcover book, you can get it in one of the other formats for free, because you already get it the PDF for free if you buy the hardcover. Mm-hmm. That's their guarantee. But it seems like what I'm seeing, I kind of got the impression that what they may eventually want to do is, if you buy the hardcover, you can get the ebook format as well for free. Mm-hmm. We'll see how that pans out. This is a little close, because it's, you know, right now it's closing on the weekend, and January 17th is the Monday. But Drive-Thru RPG is having an $11 PDF core rulebook sale.
Yeah, this is really nice.
Yeah, and the highlights for me, there's a few ones for highlights, and it's $11. But, and for some of these, that's an exorbitant savings, because even in PDF format, they're kind of expensive. mm-hmm. They have Fantasy Craft. So if you were interested in doing Fantasy Craft or just wanted to pick it up for reference, it's going to be $11. Mm-hmm. A Song of Fire and Ice, $11.
Which, that's worth picking up just for their house creation rules for creating the noble houses, especially at $11.
Right.
I'd definitely pick that up.
You know, for those that like Buffy, apparently the Buffy RPG is $11. mm-hmm. And then Paranoia Troubleshooters, which I'm not quite sure. I guess that's the latest version of Paranoia, is the impression.
I believe so. I think they're splitting it up into like three different books for...
I don't know. Paranoia is paranoia. It's like, you know, how much can you mess up and get the other players killed for it? You know, is basically what Paranoia was all about. And then the RuneQuest 2 system from Mongoose Games, that core rulebook, mm-hmm. is being sold for $11. And then
Cthulhu Tech,
yeah.
Yeah.
And then actually one of my, just because I think it's kind of weird and cool, is the Savage World of Solomon Kane. That's a Savage World game, and the PDF for that's going to be $11. So I think that's kind of pretty interesting and cool. Now,
and from what I've heard too, that's actually the that book is a self-contained book, so you don't have to have the Worlds book too.
That's a self-contained game. When you buy the hardcover, it's everything that you need to play is in there. It's not like
excellent.
It's not like a necessary evil where you need the Explorer Edition rulebook. But it's not like the Explorer Edition rulebook is that expensive.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty cheap.
Yeah, exactly.
So
I own two.
I do too. Well, actually, I bought one, and then it was falling apart, so I shipped it back, and I needed it, so I bought another copy, and that one kind of fell apart on me, but I actually drilled holes in it and stuck some brass fasteners through it.
Yeah, my first one fell apart pretty early on. That was apparently a problem with their first edition printing.
Right.
And I got that one spiral bound. But it's actually really, really nice, because you're able to open the pages to whatever page you want, and it stays open and everything. It's really, really nice.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, because technically you can ship it, you can email them, and you were able to ship it back to them, and they would ship you a new one.
Oh, okay.
So they were really good about that. They actually included some other product in it as well. I forget what it was. Rippers of the North? Rippers of something like that.
Yeah. I think it's just called Rippers.
Okay, there you go. Well, and of course, for some people, the big news is that, well, Gen Con pre-registration opens up on the 23rd of this month at noon. So, unfortunately, right now as it stands, I don't think I'm going. I know you're not going. And
yeah, we've got a baby coming along, and the baby will only be probably like two, three months old at that point. So
right, no, I understand that.
We'll be making it to that one.
And then even Zach, from what I understand, right now he's kind of saying it's very iffy if he will actually be able to attend. Really, he might go for a day, but that's about it. So, which is sad because, well, they just finished all the reconstruction work, you know, the expansion work for the Indianapolis Convention Hall. So the dealer hall that you saw, I think it's going to be like twice or two times the size or something like that. Twice is two times. It's going to be like two or three times the size it was when you went. So there's like a whole other section that we didn't see because, well, that's where they were doing all the additional work. So that's going to be opened up. So there's, and I almost want to hazard to say, you know, there's a whole bunch of rooms that are going to be available as well. So I don't know if they're going to need as many rooms as they, you know, as they had a lot of things spread out over the various hotels for different games. I'm not sure they're going to need as much space for that either. So I think it'd be very interesting to go. I'm looking at my the price break points, and it just, I don't think I can save enough money to go. You know,
well, if all three of us aren't going to be able to make it, then we should have a special podcast of us in RPG Circus in Exile from Gen Con when that comes around.
Yeah,
we can record every night of Gen Con, but just we won't be there. Something like that.
I don't know if that would do any good. So, well, I that's it for news. Anything else? I know we have a few other topics, but they're going to come through through our discussion.
Yes,
I think. Yeah, I think that it's either there's some other news that's going to come up, but those are either stuff we're discussing or we actually have an audio comment this week, and that one actually asks us about what we think about something that's actually kind of a news item. So we're just going to wait until the audio comment section comes up for that. So
sounds good.
All righty. Well, the good news is, of course, you've been very busy with the D&D encounters, right?
Yes, I have.
And
I've actually forced us to record on other days so that I was able to go to those.
Exactly. Now, and you said you've actually learned a few things. So, I mean, like what? I mean, I'm curious. I mean, I don't know.
Well, the way that the D&D encounters is set up is that you have one encounter per week, and they give you 2 hours to do so. So it's usually 7 o'clock to 9 o'clock. And so I've been doing that every single week. We took a break over Christmas, and we've just started back up. But I've actually learned quite a few things. Like, there's been a few times where we've had to miss weeks, and I wanted to make sure that we were still up to date with how everybody else in the country was going. So there was times when I would actually record two episodes. Sorry.
Yes, they're episodes. They're an Old Republic serial. Sorry.
That would be nice. That would actually be really fun to do. Anyway, we would run two encounters in those 2 hours that we had. And so one of the things I've learned is how to get combat done and done fast. When I know I only have 2 hours to get two encounters done, a lot of times monsters that are supposed to be there are not there. Monsters that should have 50 hit points suddenly have one hit point. And I think I've learned to sort of push the players forward to getting their actions done without being an ass about it. I've played in a few games
for example, like what?
The thing is, most of the players that I've got are actually kids around the age of, I think, 11 or 12. So when they're sitting there chatting with their buddies, simply speaking up and sounding like an authority figure, they snap to attention because they're used to hearing that in class. I've learned to not worry about hurting their feelings by getting louder and telling them they need to pay attention, because they're not going to get offended by it. They're kids. They're told that all the time. Usually the adults are not an issue at all with getting them to pay attention. One of the things that you can do is just, you know, when the person's sort of hem-hawing about what it is that they want to do with their actions, I'll find myself, you know, helping them calculate how many squares it is to the monster and point out different things on their character sheet to help them. Because even now, the kids, they've been playing for 13 weeks and they're still not sure what it is exactly that they're supposed to be rolling at different points. So,
My wife gets confused too.
Yeah.
I mean, in some ways that's not unusual. I mean, I think especially when you're a kid, you're interested in playing, but you're not really interested in remembering all the rules. And
yeah, exactly.
I've never thought that that's a big problem. I mean, as a game master, I know I've played really complex games like, I'm going to say for a combat system, something like Twilight 2000, the old Twilight 2000 back in the 80s.
Yeah.
Very complex system where, you know, weapons had certain armor penetration values, I think, or multipliers or something. It was just really complex. And trying to do all that math, I was very good at math. So I could do, as a game master, I could do that all in my head. I would not expect the players to be doing that. So, I always thought that, you know, in many ways, the game master's job has always been to kind of be that, almost like, you know, if you didn't need something, you'd be a technical filter almost.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, exactly.
I mean, there are people that go like, well, I would like to know every single rule because then you don't screw me as the game master. It's like, you know, our job as a game master is not to screw people.
Not screw you.
Yeah. I think that's just a harken back to, you know, really bad game masters who have that it's me against them mentality.
Mm-hmm. I've also heard that there was a big thing back in the 70s and 80s that there wasn't that many game masters, as many as there are now. And it seems like everybody's a game master nowadays. And so players were willing to sort of suffer with a bad game master for a long time because they were like, okay, where else are we going to find somebody to run a game for us?
I don't know about that. I think a lot of it is just that nobody wanted to do the job.
Yeah.
I find that even today. It's like, well, who wants to run a game? I don't know. You know, because, my wife...
That's why I run it, because nobody else will.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say about 75% of the game master population does it for that exact reason, is that nobody else wants to do the job.
Yeah.
And in my wife's case, she doesn't quite understand that a game master actually has a lot of work to do other than just show up at the session.
Yeah.
She's like, I was telling her, well, how come you're not going to go out and hang with your friends today? Well, it's like, well, you want a game tomorrow, right? I have to do some prep work.
Yeah.
It's like, what? Really? Yes. It may have not been a lot of prep work, but I knew that I was going to just have to do it in starts and stops, over the afternoon. So it's like, I'm not going out anywhere. Obviously that was you kind of had that direction thing. And what other ways did you find to speed things up besides that? Anything particular? You mentioned, of course, earlier the whole, reducing monsters' hit points and stuff. Did that have or not even having them at all? I mean, I'm not sure how the encounters are set up. Does that affect the encounter result somehow, or is that not really that important?
It's not really that important. A lot of times you'll have, more often than not, you'll have it set up that there's a certain number of minions in there, which are the monsters with one hit point, and there's a certain number of monsters that are normal. But you'll end up in a room and, I'll have an hour left because I've already knocked out one encounter. And I know that I have 1 hour to get this one encounter done, and none of the monsters in the room are minions. They're all monsters with all kinds of hit points and everything. And yeah, the players might be able to hit them, but it's going to take them a while to take them down. So a lot of times, too, is if a character is close enough within a few points of blooding the monster, which means knocking it down to half of its hit points, I'll say it's bloodied and use that as its halfway point. So it ends up usually shaving off about 10 hit points or so from a monster, things like that. Little minor things like that will end up just speeding up combat and making things move a lot smoother. So that's pretty much what I've been doing for as far as speeding up combat.
So, anything else interesting that can apply elsewhere?
I have learned the joy of hurting my players. I've always been really, really nice to my players and helped them out as much as possible. And I help them out as far as like rules go and things like that. But I have found myself enjoying seeing characters get bloodied and knocked unconscious and then cackling with laughter as they begin to fail their rolls to see if they're going to die or not. Nobody's died yet. But if somebody did, I think I'd I wouldn't be overjoyed, but it might be kind of satisfying. But at the same time, I'm not going to screw over my players, because in the end, if it's the players versus the GM always wins, because I have a red dragon figure, and that, and you can take down your players at any point. But it is fun to beat them up a little bit.
Well, I mean, I think that's where that whole GM versus players mentality comes from, is it? Because at a certain point, you, as a GM, it's your job to make it challenging for the players.
Exactly.
And if they're not being challenged, if they're not, let's put it this way, if the player characters aren't in danger, then it's pointless to even run the encounter or run a situation. And I firmly believe that. I mean, sometimes it may have some sort of story effect, if you will. You know, there might be a story reason for that encounter. But if the players are not in danger, then I almost, my rule of thumb would be just to skip the encounter unless you plan on beefing it up.
Oh, yeah. You know, absolutely.
You know, because it's like, and I mean, that's the weird thing about RPGs in general. It's like, there's no sense in, like, if they're traveling through the wilderness, there's no sense in belaboring it for like 3 hours traveling through the wilderness unless there's a purpose to it. You know,
that's why
time is variable in RPGs. I mean, could you imagine trying to run an RPG in fairly real time?
Yeah.
Okay, what am I doing? You know, no, I'm not doing that. So, no, I mean, I just, you know, it boggles my mind. You know, it's like, because I just ran, the game I was running, it was like, you know, well, it's a 3-day trek to where they need to go. Are they going to have an encounter? You know, what? You know, the first night they had an encounter, but the other two nights they didn't. I was going to spend, like, a lot of time, you know, it's like I went and said, okay, the second day was okay, this, you're going to go to camp, okay, you know, do the thing, but don't actually, you know, even the first day, you know, that's kind of the way it was. It wasn't like, well, you know, you see the blue bird in the sky and it's falling. Well, what the hell does that have to do with the adventure? If nothing, why are you mentioning it?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think sometimes as game, some of the more heavily story-oriented people may introduce elements that have nothing to do with anything. It's almost like, I hate to tell people, it's kind of like the a book versus a movie.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of always liken that a lot of RPGs, game sessions, are more like movies than books.
Yeah.
And I know some people would disagree with that, but take a book. Make it into a movie. What's one of the things people complain about a movie that's based on a book? What's the big top line?
It cuts out a bunch of stuff.
They cut out a bunch of stuff. They got it wrong. Where is this character? Well, that character wasn't really necessary to make a good movie, so they left it out. I mean, take Lord of the Rings. I mean, that was a pretty large book, you know, set of movies that they based off some books. But even then, they condensed things. They cut things out. They merged characters. Why? Because they had to. There's just not enough time. And it's not that, I hate to tell you, I'm sorry, it's not that interesting. Mm-hmm. It may be interesting when you read it in a book because you have all the time in the world and you expect that.
Exactly.
But there's a pacing issue. And I think we have that problem in gaming too sometimes, where you got to keep the pace up. And if it's really slow and really boring, if it's boring for your players, and even if you're getting some sort of weird enjoyment out of it, you've failed as a GM because your players are bored. And I'm not saying, like I said, you don't have to capitulate to everything that they want, because that's not your job. But it's like, you are there to provide them, you know, some sort of entertainment. You are, in effect, the entertainment director.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's a hard thing. So, yeah, combat and other things can be changed. So,
yeah.
Well, I don't know. You have anything else you need to add to this?
No, I don't think so. That's what I learned from DMing a bunch of kids, and we've still got about a month left. So once that's all done, then I'll give you my my final results on how it went and how many players I ended up killing off. Well, player characters.
Player characters. All right. Well, actually, you never know. I mean, depending on the kid, you might win a
little. That's true. There are a couple.
So, well, the other thing that we kind of want to talk about this session, we actually had a request for this, was to get our opinion on the, WotC announcement about fortune cards. Now, this I'm going to read. Go ahead and read what they say about fortune cards. This came from the ampersand is what they call it. It was the category.
That's their ampersand is sort of their
announcement.
Their
page.
Opinion piece. Yeah.
Yeah. So in here it says fortune cards, a new accessory for the D&D role playing game debuts next month. D&D fortune card shadows over, I don't know, whatever, Nidavale or some.
Nintir Vale.
Okay, there you go. I can't pronounce that. You know, that's why, honestly, I like doing my building my own worlds, is because guess what? I can pronounce everything because I wrote it down. I wrote it down. Provide a new way to tackle challenges of an adventurer. Each pack of 8 random fortune cards will give you characters in-game benefits and brief power-ups without adding more complexity to the game. Specifically designed for use in the D&D RPG home games and the D&D Encounters in-store play program, fortune cards are themed so you can build a deck suited to your character's style of play. Here are a couple examples. They give some examples of initial set of 80 cards. You don't have to collect them all to use the fortune cards. They actually work best when you either pop open a booster during play or when you use 2 or 3 boosters to build a deck for your character. I guess they're coming out next month is from what they say.
I think so, yeah.
And they show you 3 cards. And, I mean, since I don't play 4th edition, I don't really... players play at the start and end of turn. You gain a base some sort of weird damage stuff. You know, it gives you some weird bonuses. Now, where the controversy, I think, kind of comes from this is random cards, for one, and then they're sold as booster decks. It's like, wait a minute, what game am I playing? I think that's kind of been the major, like, what the hell kind of stuff that I've heard. It's like, wait a minute, are we playing D&D or are we playing a collectible card game? So that, I think, is the major kind of plug against it. I mean, and they're random cards, so it's like there's a chance that you could buy 2 or 3 decks and have the same cards in them that you don't need. And it's like, why? So you're telling me, and I'm not sure, I mean, they don't describe exactly, they say you build a deck for your character. It's like, okay, so does everyone have these deck of cards and then you get to use them, or do you select a few per session? They don't say in here, obviously.
It's supposed to work kind of like Gamma Worlds did. You're supposed to sort of build your own little deck that can include like more than 3 of one specific card, and it has to include at least 7 cards, I think. So you could build just like a 7-card little deck that has 3 different abilities in it that you're randomly going to pull. Yeah, so that's how it's supposed to work. Or you can have a game master deck where the game master just has a big old deck of cards in front of him and you draw from that.
Huh. I mean, have you played Gamma World?
I have Gamma World. I have not gotten a chance to actually sit down and play it yet.
Okay.
But I've read over the rules and everything.
Yeah, because I mean, I can, you know, since I don't do 4th edition and I haven't done Gamma World, I mean, I played the original Gamma World. Few editions. I actually still have a second printing of a first edition Gamma World rulebook in my collection. Yay.
Excellent.
And I have the original GW1 Legion of Gold, which is a Gamma World adventure written by Gary Gygax that is really actually more like it's D&D but with mutants. I mean, really when you read the way the adventure goes, it really is. That's the way it's really designed. It's like you're in a barony, okay? So there's like this feudal society, which I guess makes sense, but it's like there's a feudal society, but then, you know, the armory, instead of just having, you know, swords and spears and stuff in it, there are some laser pistols and blast pistols in there. Like, okay, that's great.
Yeah.
So, I mean, my opinion of this is I kind of understand why people are concerned, because it's like, okay, so there's going to be 80 cards. Obviously, you don't need them all, but it's an RPG. I don't think having a collectible aspect to it is such a hot idea. Now, if they sold a deck of just the 80 cards or something, or, you know, that might be okay. I don't know. I'm just personally not of a fan of, hey, I have to buy a whole bunch of stuff just to get a whole bunch of random things. I mean, how many times has WotC had stuff that's been random and it's never really turned out well? Like, like kind of like the D&D minis, you know, the old D&D minis. It's like, oh, we buy these random sets. And what happened with those is people would get, you know, these are some commons and these are some uncommons and these are rares. And, you know, people would buy a whole bunch of, would buy cases. I knew people who would buy cases and they'd split them among themselves and they'd try to get at least one or two decent figures out of a bunch. So it's just like that. And then they would sell their more common ones on eBay or something for people who wanted them. So I don't know.
Here's my take on it. A lot of people are complaining, oh, now I have to buy these cards. Well, you don't have to buy them. They're a purely optional thing for it. And a lot of people, I've had a couple people say, well, if you, what if you show up for a game and you don't have any cards, but all your friends have a bunch of cards? Well, unless you're playing with a bunch of guys that are douches that I would never want to play with, they're going to let you pull from their decks. I don't really see the, well, everybody else has them, so I'll have to buy them too. I don't see that as an actual issue. And in addition, it's not supposed to be that you're supposed to get like a large deck. You're not supposed to build a magic size deck. It's that if you want to buy a pack, you can show up for a game, for the game, and have the pack that everybody shares. I've heard of a couple people doing that with Gamma World, where they'll run a game and one person brings one of the booster packs. They open it up and those are everybody's abilities for the night. And you could do the same thing with this, because all it does is it gives you some fairly generic bonuses here and there, allows rerolls, things like that. So I don't see it as this big, huge money sink. I imagine most groups are maybe going to spend at most, maybe buy 10 packs, which would be $40 at most. But I think in general, most people aren't going to go buying cases of them like they do with like Magic and with even like the D&D minis. It's not going to be a cash cow like the D&D minis were.
Yeah, I guess I agree and disagree with the uncertain points. Trust me, I do see where I do see where people are. There will be some snobbery about them in a way, where people are going to say, "Well, you don't own them; you need to buy a deck." You know, I can see where I can see that happening. Just because, no offense, even among friends, yeah, you know, it's like dice. No, you can't borrow my dice. You're going to curse my own dice. You know, that kind of crap. I'm sure that will crop up. And, you know, you said they're optional, and I understand that, but I almost guarantee you that people are going to there are going to be groups, not all the groups. There will be very specific and select groups that are going to say, no, they're not optional, they're required. So I don't know. It's at least the bonuses from what you said are fairly generic. The examples they give don't seem too, you know, exciting, really. It's not that big of a deal. So, but I do think it, you know, of course we haven't seen all the cards yet either.
Yeah.
That of course is a problem. There may be some cards that really, kind of like, you know, what always happened in Magic was there were cards that were broken.
Yeah. And I think there will be broken cards, but I don't think there's going to be any crap cards like they have in Magic, where there's cards that just nobody's ever going to use, but they had to pad out the number of cards they had out there. I don't think they're going to be cards that people are literally just going to throw away.
Well, I don't know. I mean, they say they have an initial set of 80 cards. I can see them just coming up with new ones just for the hell of it, because they want to sell more cards.
Yeah.
I mean, I really do see that. I mean, is it going to be a huge cash cow? No, but I mean, one of the problems with gaming in general is the same. It's like you produce a product and you want to do more sales. It's like the role-playing games has always been that weird environment where you buy a rule book and technically, you outside of the rule book, you don't really need much else. You know, so for the company producing the game, it's not like there's repeat business anywhere in there. And it's like, for a gaming group, you really kind of only need one per group. It's not like most people. Now, don't get me wrong. On the other hand, I find that most people, if they really like a game, are going to buy a copy.
Yeah.
So if you have a group of five people, probably at least half of them are going to have a copy of the game. That's just kind of the way that works, if not everybody.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, but the problem, of course, is that eventually all those people will have a copy of the game. So
yeah.
It's kind of like there's that penetration, which is why, you know, that's kind of a warped reason to have a new edition because, well, maybe there's some stuff that's broken, but it's like, hey, now we have a new buy cycle. It's kind of, I mean, honestly, it's kind of like Microsoft, unfortunately, in that regard, where you're always going to have, you know, newer and newer, you know, versions of the software, whether or not you need it. Now, people will argue with me whether or not you need new versions of Microsoft, you know, the operating system, whatever. That's neither here nor there. My point is that, you know, in many ways, it is kind of a business decision to do some of those things.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the idea here is that don't get me wrong, as a company, they want to make money. So, yes, they're going to try to produce products that they want you to buy, period. That's the way it works. So I think it'll be interesting to see one way or the other. I don't know. I'm just a little dubious of having to buy cards for a game. You know what I mean? Especially random cards. It's like, you know, okay, what am I going to get in this random deck? You know, who knows? You know, maybe you can get some good ones in there, and maybe you can get nothing. How many cards are in a booster deck? 8?
I think there's 8 for $4. So they're about 50 cents a piece. The way that I actually plan on using them in my game, because I do plan on picking some up, is I'll probably end up picking up about 3 or 4 packs to start off with and use those. And instead of having the players draw from them, I'll probably hand them out to players as rewards. Like if they do something cool, then they get a card. You know, if they do this, they get a card. They get it, you know, they roll a 20, get a card. I think I'll sort of apply my own little achievement system within the game, because I think that can actually help.
Using a system like that makes a little more sense. But again, like I said, that's why I would think it would make more sense to actually have, like, almost like a finite deck.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, see, that's the thing. It's like I would have expected it would be better to have a slightly more expensive deck of cards and have a finite number of cards, but then, like you said, hand them out to the players as some sort of rewards, and then they have a special thing they can do once, or you know, or just randomly assign each player a couple of cards, you know, whatever, from a finite deck. And it's like, if no two cards are alike, then you know that you have at least one special thing to do that go around. So
yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I think time will tell. The thing it does remind me, though, is that we are entering an era where a lot of RPGs are starting to kind of become quasi more board game-ish in the tools that are used.
Yeah, like Warhammer Fantasy.
Right, you know.
With all of its cards and things like that.
Right, you know, and don't get me wrong. I mean, for Warhammer Fantasy, it makes sense because the company that makes it makes a lot of really good board games. So, I mean...
Though, actually, really, really quick, they have actually just announced that they're going to be coming out with hardback versions of their books that have it set up that you don't need all of these little pieces, and it's going to have the rules for all the cards within those books. So it'll actually be a much lower pricing point that they just recently announced.
Oh, for Warhammer?
For Warhammer, yeah. So anybody who is it really like, oh, I don't know about it because there's all these little parts that I might lose. Well, they're going to be releasing hardback books. They're going to make it much more of a traditional role-playing game.
Well, I'm just saying, though. I mean, I understood why they did that. I mean, it was definitely...
Oh, yeah.
It was definitely going with their strengths. And don't get me wrong, it's a slick-looking box and stuff.
Yeah.
So. I mean, like I said, I can understand why they went that route. So,
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, so I guess, you know, we're going to sit and see, you know, in a couple months maybe, see where everyone is on these things. I mean, right now everyone's freaking out, are really excited. I mean, it's hard to say. I mean, I think they're just, you know, anytime anything comes out, there's going to be a bunch of naysayers, and there's going to be a lot of people go like, well, it's going to do this, and it's going to do that. And it's like, well, let's just wait and see. You know, that was the thing with 4th edition. Wait and see, looked at it, decided it wasn't for me, which, you know, my viewpoint's always been, that's the great thing about role-playing games. If you don't like, if there's one role-playing game you don't like the way they did something, there's another game out there that surely fit your needs.
Mm-hmm. So exactly.
So, well, I think that is that's kind of about it for that. There's we did get one audio comment, so why don't we play that, because that has another interesting question in it.
Yeah.
Hey guys, what's up? This is Greg, aka Shinobi Cow. I run the Dumpstat, and I'm also a semi-frequent poster on Stargazer's World. I wanted to call in and say I really am enjoying the podcast. I just got caught up on all the old ones and have been re-listening to some of the ones that I really liked. I did have a question about what you guys think about the new announcement by Wizards of the Coast regarding the, I guess, the end to the pre-painted miniatures lines. And in conjunction with that, I was wondering whether any of you plan on picking up either the Castle Ravenloft board game or the Wrath of Ashardalon board game, considering the fact that they kind of come with a huge set of built-in minis. So, thanks again. Keep up the good work. Look forward to hearing some of your Season 3. Take care. Bye.
Well, that's actually an interesting question, because I'm never really collected the plastic minis at all.
Mm.
I've been more of a, I like the metal minis. So,
yeah.
Well, again, I think this goes back to what I was saying earlier. You know, they had a miniature game where, you know, it was all random, and then they were actually selling them in regular predefined sets at one point, right? It seems.
Yeah, they were selling the heroes all in predefined sets, and then the monsters, they had one visible monster, and then the rest of them were random. So you could pick up, it was the big monster of the pack, you knew what you were getting.
Yeah,
but then the rest were all random.
So, to answer that question, at least for me, I just kind of don't care, because don't get me wrong. I actually here was always my thought on the plastic minis. I love the metal minis, but the advantage of plastic was that you know there are some really large miniatures that you can do in plastic that are would either be too heavy or too expensive to do in metal, There were monsters, especially like there were always monsters that, you know, you might use every once in a while, but why would you know, most people would never buy a miniature for that. So in plastic, it would make sense to get it. And some of them are just impossible. It's like, you know, honestly, have you ever seen some of the metal Beholders miniatures?
Yeah.
Not quite right. You know, even the plastic didn't look good, but at least because it was plastic, you had a little, there were some things. The problem with the plastic, of course, is that most people said, A, they were painted horribly. I don't know. I mean, they were okay. Or, you know, the problem with plastic, of course, is there's not as much detail usually when compared to a metal mini. And I don't know if that's always a bad thing. You know, hell, I'm sorry. I hate to tell people. I've actually used Green Army Men for monsters. So, you know.
I've used candy before.
Candy, yeah.
Yeah.
So, and then, to reply, I have no plans to pick up, you know, Ravenloft or the other game you mentioned, just because, well, I don't know what miniatures are in Ravenloft. I guess a vampire and a whole bunch of undead.
They're a bunch of undead. From what I've seen, they do have some. I think I recall, because I haven't actually seen the game physically,
right. But
from what I recall seeing in pictures, I think there were some ghosts in there that were actually transparent plastic, which is kind of nifty.
Yeah, you know, I guess that's it. It's like, you know, I guess I might buy it for that, but probably not.
Yeah.
No, I mean, I don't know. I mean, if the game itself was a good game, then yeah, I'd probably pick it up, and then I might use the minis out of it. But just to pick up the game just for the minis, probably not.
Yeah. With me, I've got a bunch of the plastic minis, and I do prefer metal for the fact that I can paint them and I can make them look really nice. But plastic is really, really convenient, especially when you need to get a bunch of kobolds out on the board.
What are you talking about? I have like 10.
Yeah. I think I've got about 20 plastic ones, cause I got a bunch of them when the original, D&D minis first started coming out, the painted ones. And you can actually usually find a lot of different figures pretty cheap in singles online. If there's a particular figure you want, I I understand that why WotC is getting rid of their plastic figures. Obviously, they aren't making enough money, because if they're making enough money, they'd still be making them. And as a company, they can't, you know, please everybody. And if something's not cutting it, then they've got to cut it. And as far as the other games, I probably won't be picking them up, because they're basically D&D light. And if I want to play a dungeon crawl board game, I've got Descent, which I like that much better than what I've seen for the other D&D board games. So, and most of those figures that you can get in those sets are, one, they're unpainted and they're plastic. So if I want to get some, if I want to paint some figures, I'm going to paint metal ones because of the detail. And most of those figures are all just molds of fully painted figures that you can probably find online. You can probably find all of those figures that are in the set for probably half the price online. So if you're picking it up just for the minis, you can find already painted ones online for cheaper. So
so there you go. I mean, they actually did produce quite a few. I mean, there is quite a supply.
Yeah, they have a huge collection of the figures. You're definitely going to have an easy time finding
at least within the next year
for
or
a while.
Two. So
yeah.
You know, because I remember, like I said, I remember seeing photos where guys would have, like, I have all these figures and they're on my shelf and I have tons of them and I don't need them. It's like, okay.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think in many ways, just a lot of these decisions, of course, are all. Magic the Gathering had such a weird cultural impact on gaming. You know, there was this whole, mm-hmm. there's this whole process. And the problem is that, even though Magic sells still pretty well, and all the other collectible games do too, I don't think there was the fever for buying them that there once was.
Yeah.
You know, I think there was like this weird spike in popularity, and then it went away. Because, I mean, there would be game shops that used to sell RPGs, and then all of a sudden, all they did was Magic. And basically, I mean, mm-hmm. that was kind of what you had to do. It's like either you sold Magic and did just Magic, or you sold everything but Magic. was kind of the point. Now it's kind of like, well, I don't play Magic. I play, I don't know, Yu-Gi-Oh or whatever the Pokemon or something, whatever your collectible card game of choice is. And it's just like, okay,
mm-hmm.
whatever. So, I mean, I understand why, you know, in many ways, I understand why WotC keeps trying to create some sort of collectible something, because. Mm. For them, that's kind of a hook for them to get
yeah.
additional sales. And I understand that, but I actually hate to say it. I think the mindset for most role players is they're not collectors in that type of sense. They'll collect rule books, mm-hmm. sure. I mean, hell,
yeah.
I think we all do. But, you know, we don't collect other things. You know, we collect, but we're very selective. We don't like collecting random things. We don't like doing the random bit. That's not us. We're like, you know what? I need X miniature, so I will buy that. Or I need X rules, so I will buy that rule set. Or, you know, this game sucks, but it has some interesting background material, so I'll buy this supplement.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah.
we pick and choose what we collect. It's like, for example, I have games that I will never play because they were interesting concepts or just interesting in some way, but the rule sets were horrible. So,
yeah.
You know, I think that's why I understand why WotC's doing these things, and now I can understand why, you know, they would discontinue it. But no, I guess to answer the question is no. I just don't think most people care. So and no, I don't.
Which
I mean,
is probably why the miniatures are no longer being produced.
Well, yeah, because most serious people that want to use miniatures, honestly, they're going to buy the metal ones. That's just kind of been my viewpoint. Because, well, you can mod the metal ones, and then you can go from there. So, well, I would have to say I think that's it for that comment. If any of you guys would like to actually say something to us, you can always contact us through, well, we have a plethora of ways to do that. You can send us an email at info@rpgcircus.com. You can call us and leave us a voicemail at 1-888-643-6322. That was 1-888-643-6322. You can Twitter us at RPG Circus. You can go to the RPG Circus Facebook page, which if you do a search on Facebook for RPG Circus, it's there. Hell, we have a form over at rpgtabletalk.com, and you can leave us a message there. And we check quite a few of those, and hopefully that about does it. Wow. So, unfortunately, like I said, we had quite a little episode, even without Zach. I wish he was here, because he actually had planned some good stuff for us. Well, hopefully next time he'll bring it.
Yeah.
Do you have any closing comments for us? Closing thoughts? Concepts?
No, make sure to like us on Facebook, because we've got, I think, around 50 people who like us on there. And you can look that up. Just look up RPG Circus and you'll find us.
Yeah, I think that's it. Some other podcasts we know actually say they have a fairly active, you know, Facebook page. And I like Facebook, but I guess I'm not a Facebook addict. So, but yeah, do that for us, because that would be interesting. Because I don't know if I actually think that might be a more accurate representation of everyone actually who actually listens to the podcast liked us there, to know how many people actually listen. So,
yeah.
In case you're curious, statistics for podcasts are always kind of wacky, because you really don't know how many people actually listen to you. So it would just be interesting to know. I have a rough idea. I think we have about 500 plus listeners, but even that number is kind of, you know, I know that we have over X number of people who subscribe to our RS feed, but that's not every, you know, that's like the daily average. And it's like, okay, well, that doesn't mean that, that doesn't mean that people check less often, or, you know, and then our downloads sometimes are three or four times that average number. So it's like, okay, I do know.
Yeah.
So I always say we probably have roughly about 500 some odd listeners, but we may have more, we may have less, but, no matter what, we enjoy the fact that
you like us, then we'll know.
Yeah, exactly. So, well, that's it for this show. I hope to see everyone again next week. Next week, God, why do I say week? It's my deep, dark, subconscious desire to do this show weekly. Unfortunately,
yeah,
we can't cut it. So we're sorry. We'd love to actually do this weekly, but we're going to call it out now, and we will see you next time.
See ya.
The preceding podcast is released under a Creative Commons 3.0 Attribution US license. For more information, go to creativecommons.org.